Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 90 of season 11 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again, because he was on an interview episode a long, long time ago, is Leighton Hughes of the We Happy Few 506 podcast. Welcome back to the show, Leighton.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Now we can, you know, the last time we talked about things in general, this time we can talk specifics. So it works well. It works well. All right. So episode 90 begins with Luz watching in despair and ends with Lip watching Malarkey say goodbye to Buck. So, I mean, a lot's going on the last few days, and we're not done. You know, yesterday we ended things with Luz crawling towards the foxhole of Mukim Pinkala and then seeing a huge explosion. And today's segment begins as he's watching completely distraught, realizing that he's probably pretty glad that he didn't get to that foxhole, because, you know, I don't know what the statistics are of how easy it was to get a direct hit on a foxhole or not, but that's what happened to Muck and Pinkala. And if Luz would have made it there and wouldn't have fallen along the way, you know, he might have joined them in that I guess, for lack of a better phrase, bloodbath, you know, which my assumption is it affected Luz for the rest of his life, knowing how close he was to something like that to happen. So he's crawling, in the middle of this barrage, still trying to figure out, and he just gets up and, you know, runs in the opposite direction just to find a way to, you know, get safe. And he falls again and then gets pulled into the foxhole by Lip, who obviously, you know, as we all know, Lip is the main guy on this, in this particular part, in part seven. You know, everything is from his perspective, and we'll see next week, what everyone thinks about that and why it's so perfect that he's the one who was chosen for this one. And, you know, anyone who heard my discussion with Graham about a week and a half ago, you would know, you know, why he basically decided that Lip was the perfect person to have this this particular part to revolve around, which is great. You know, I love the way that they do that. And, you know, Lip pulls him into the foxhole, and with all the blasting and the sounds of everything going on around them and stuff like that, Luz screams, and, you know, we can barely hear him also. And he goes, "Mukim Pinkala," and Lip goes, "What?" And he goes, "Mukim Pinkala got hit." And then there's even more explosions of what's going on, you know, as they're both trying to find ways to stay somewhat safe. You know, we even see that they're like huge. There's huge pieces of timber right behind them that get blown away, you know, from some of the impact, you know, from all the barrage around them. And I mean, even Lip's helmet goes flying off at a certain point. So again, they give us a great perspective of what these men, or any man, would be going through if they're sitting in this type of barrage. You know, so I like that. You know, I like the way that they do that, because it really gives us, one of the things that Banner Brothers tries to do, and you probably know this better than I do after having spoken to so many people that are involved in it, Leighton, that, you know, they want us to feel what these men felt. And this scene does it just so well.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's an incredible scene. I'm just looking at one of the drafts now of the script, and I suppose, taken away from that, you know, I thought, in honor of doing the show, episode 7, I'm wearing Lipton's jacket.
Oh, wow.
From that, one of his jackets, which he had one of three. So this is one of them screen matched. It's quite warm. I should take her off, but it's his M43 jacket, you know, with the faded flag and the full of rips, and you know, it smells old. It's incredible, and it's probably my holy grail of the piece of a sorry for a, you know, of a prop of a of an item, you could say. It's one of one. And going back to this episode, you're right, Rob. It's quite a fascinating episode, and I'll take her off because it's quite warm now.
That's okay. I saw it.
And
I'm proof that you really did were wearing it. So there you go.
I was going to wear a helmet. I got off one of the extras as well. But no, I think that episode.
This is the exact jacket that Danny Wahlberg wore.
Yeah.
No.
And it's I suppose for me it's an iconic jacket. Just because of this particular episode, and I remember, you know, watching it when Band of Brothers first came out, and for me the jacket was so identifiable, because you are focusing on Lipton, you know, it's his perspective, and there was just I just went and thinking, oh, that's a great jacket, and never in a million years did I think I'd own it, but you're right, it's Lipton, and it's Lipton's perspective, and because you could say he was a consistent throughout Easy Company's time, you know, from Tekoa through and obviously becoming, you know, company, you know, first sergeant. And it's that barrage, it's incredible, isn't it? I remember when I was in the military and my friend got a new television. We set it up and he got a sound system with it. You got a Blu-ray player, you know, and I said, oh, you know, let's put Band of Brothers on. Let's put on episode 7, you know, let's put this episode on and see what it's like. Let's test that sound system. And you're right. It gives the viewer a feel of what it was like, you know, it gives the actors the feel of what it was like during that time. I mean, as a viewer, it's a sound system, you know, and it is. What's the word? You know, it's like how Lipton was. You know, when it focuses on Lipton, when he's just watching it, what's he call it, like the fireworks of 4th of July, I think he said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's about not realizing actually what actually were the repercussions of that, because he was just so, what's the word, enthralled, you know, he's just so captivated by the barrage, you know, the noises, the visuals of it all, you know. But obviously what he's not realizing at the time is that people were getting hurt, getting killed, you know, and it's, I suppose it's quite easy to sort of just, I don't know how to describe it, but yeah, no, it really puts you there, doesn't it, as a viewer,
right.
Puts you right there in the forest, in the woods with them, in the Bojack with them.
Yeah, it really does. And I mean, I'm always just amazed about the fact that this was done on a soundstage, you know.
I know
you have all these parts,
it's incredible, isn't it,
like that, and it's all just you know, it's indoors.
Yeah, it is. And you know, it's there was, you know, if I don't know if other people have told you this, you know, the actors you've spoke to, but they were sweating, you know, it was supposed to be winter and it's summertime. And I think somebody told me, I might have seen it, but I have to go back and double check in episode 6 with this focusing on Doc Rowe, Shane Taylor. A fly buzzes onto him, you know, you don't get that in the winter.
Right.
One of those telltale signs, you know, but. Yeah, all a soundstage. It's incredible, isn't it? It's, and I think the camera that they used as well, you know, the sort of the camera work adds to the sort of mistiness of it, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Do you know what I think?
Well, partially because of the way that the camera moves, and also by the I mean, they've done sort of the entire series, you know, how they saturate the colors. You know, which,
yeah,
that's
what I'm thinking of. Yeah, the saturation of the color, you know, and they. It works really well in the summertime, then, you know, Normandy to, yeah, how the color is. It's incredible. I think that's such forward thinking for a TV show.
Yeah. Well, again, they based a lot of what they did here on what was going, what happened in what they did in Saving Private Ryan, you know, which had the same type of theme and, you know, let's saturate the color and, you know, it worked so well there. They're like, okay, let's do that here too. And now, you know, 25 years later, just about every World War II movie does that.
Yeah. No, it is. You know, even sort of with, you know, Saints and Soldiers, you know, it was, you know, as bad as it is, you know, I think I remember seeing it advertised as the movie version of episode 6 and 7.
Right.
You know, of the Battle of the Bulge, Band of Brothers episodes. And it was, It was terrible. But this still has that, the cap, like we said, the saturation of the color. I feel like it's there as well. I mean, it's I've watched it once and never again. But from memory, I felt like it was there as well.
Okay, makes sense. Again, because that's how we now associate World War II movies. That it has to be saturated.
Yeah, it's I think it's a stand. I think Band of Brothers set a standard for a lot of things as well. For a lot of productions, and I think a lot of them are compared to Band of Brothers.
Yeah, I mean, it's
You know,
become
because I think
a
it's they had the money.
right. Exactly.
You know, I don't, and I think what other productions fall foul of is they don't have that the same budget as Band of Brothers. So they don't get the right cast. You could say poorly directed, poorly written, whatever. And it's obviously hard then, you are being compared against Band of Brothers or The Pacific. It's a tough act to follow.
Sure. And then the shot changes, and we get to see Hashi, who's who's running, and then he falls down and screams out, and then we see that he's been injured, and he starts calling for a medic, and he goes, "Medic, medic!" And then I'm pretty sure Shifty shows up and sees him, and he goes, "Hashi," and Hashi goes, "It's my shoulder." And he goes, "Come on, get up!" And he pulls him out of the way. Trying to get him back
Yeah.
into some sort of safe area. And then,
Well, that medic should have been Spina,
no, it wasn't.
Ralph Spina, who we
Well,
see
was
it. It should have been going off this script, which I find really interesting as well. Just you talking about that then,
No,
sorry, just
that's
follow
okay.
it line by
Yeah.
line, which is it's really cool to do. I should do this more. Should have been Ralph Spina, because it's interesting. I don't know if you spoke to Chris Langlois, who's the grandson of Doc
I've
Rowe, the
spoken
real
to him,
Doc
sure.
Rowe. When he the story he always says is, when he got given the book of Band of Brothers, hey, read this, it's got your grandfather in it. And I think, from what Chris will tell you, like when he first read it, he sort of tossed it away and going, I
Mentioned
think
twice.
age
That was it.
mentioned, yeah, exactly, but Ralph Spina is mentioned quite a lot, which it's interesting why they went for the Doc Rowe angle of the focus, and Ralph Spina's only shown once, where in the book, he's mentioned a lot more than Doc Rowe,
I think
which that's.
that's probably because of Bruce. I
Oh,
think
really?
Bruce was enthralled by the idea of the whole story with Doc Rowe and Renee, and decided let's expand that. Because I mean, Bruce. What one of the things that Bruce told me was is that he, when he was writing the episode of Part Six, so he wanted he would speak to the other writers in previous episodes and say, "Look, you need a medic here. Use Doc Rowe." So this way, when my Doc Rowe centric episode shows up, people won't say, "Who the hell is Doc Rowe?" They'll already have seen him a few times before. But I think that's part of it, and I'm sure
That
that
makes
Spina, I'm sure
sense.
Spina did a lot of good when he was there, but when you're making a TV show or a movie, you need to focus in on certain characters, and unfortunately Spina got cut out of a lot of things because of that. But this.
That's a really interesting intake. Yeah, really different. What you just said then about how there's droplets of Doc Rowe in the build-up, because he wasn't in Camp Tocoa either. Doc Rowe wasn't. He wasn't a
No, no,
Camp
no.
Tocoa
Well, they didn't need medics. In that first
original.
episode, they didn't need medics.
But that's actually a really interesting. Yeah, you drip feeding him. So then obviously that build-up to. But no, that's really interesting how you describe that with. You drip feed in Doc Rowe because you're introducing him later in the show to have his own centric episode, which makes sense again because post Ep 6, sorry, you don't see as much of him other than
That's
that
right.
date, if I remember rightly, with Jackson. That's really interesting, obviously, because I suppose when you listen to the veterans talk about Doc, talk about the medics, they say Doc Rowe just ran through everything, where he's not so mentioned in the book, veteran wise they spoke about him a lot, so it probably gives you, yeah, that again, that key indicator of why the focus was Doc Rowe as well. No, so it's really interesting, but in the script, it talks about
Right, and
the
they don't even
Spina.
use a medic here because he's screaming out for a medic, and we see Shifty show up.
It's interesting, mate. No, it is. It's Italy. I think it, with scripts, you know, with all the various drafts, it's always it's very different, isn't it? It's that's why I find them really, really interesting. You know, that's why I find them, yeah, really, really interesting from what you see written down to what we see on screen. So yeah, I've just got it now on my screen. Where somebody comes along, definitely not a medic, definitely not Spina. And it does, you're right, it looks like Shifty from memory. Not memory, sorry,
because
what's in front of me,
Shifty
sorry.
has the, you know, the white cloth on his helmet to help him, you know, to help him blend into the snow, which makes sense, you know, that a sniper would do that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's you know what you can do, isn't it? And anything to sort of make you part of the terrain to blend in. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
And now,
And
yeah.
one of the things,
That's interesting, yeah.
that I think it was Graham who told me this, you know, that there are a lot of scenes that, you know, characters are uncharacteristically without helmets, or they give them some sort of something extra, you know, in their wardrobe so that we can tell them apart. You know, that type of thing. So like, I don't know if
Yeah,
Shifty
I think.
really had a white cloth over his helmet or not, but it helps us to identify him. You know, so.
Yeah, I think it's obviously being a World War II film, and obviously the coloring of the camera, I think that really feeds into it as well, because you've got to identify these people.
Right, and again, most of them at the time were not recognized. You know, were not recognizable on screen. So you need to find a way to do it. I mean, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, they're showing the impact. That's so great that Lip's helmet flies off, but this way you can actually tell it's Lip. You know, that, you know, it has a dual purpose, I guess you can say, from that perspective. You know, showing
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I we had Donnie Wahlberg on one of our Zooms during COVID, and he said, you know, he spoke to Carwood Lipton at the time, you know, and they want me to do this, this, and this, you know, helmet off, yada yada yada, and he's like, no, we never took my helmet off, and he went by what he said because, well, that's not what he would do, because why would you take your helmet off? But I suppose in this case with the barrage. Is you could, you know, the blasts of the explosives going off could knock her off, and it could explain that as well, because, you know, they're running, they're jumping, you know, they're all over the place, so it wasn't necessarily strapped down because it didn't look pretty cool, you know, for the, you know, actual soldiers. If you look at a lot of photos, you never see them with a strap, unless they're on a landing craft, so it's very easy for it to fall off, you know, while they're scampering, you know, for cover or a foxhole. So yeah, no, it's so then when he's in the foxhole with Luz
Right,
smoking,
well, we're not there yet. We're
it
about
makes
to get there.
sense.
And then we're back with Luz and Lipton both covering their heads with their hands as the barrage is still coming. And then you know, it's a great shot because it shows the two of them, you know, in a little bit of a distance, and then you see something hit the side of the foxhole, and a whole bunch of dirt flies up, and then you see that it's a dud. You know, a rocket dud that lands there. And the two of them are just looking at this dud, and as you started saying before, you know, we now know this is Lipton and Luz. You know, the two of them are just in shock, especially after the fact that both of them know what just happened to Muck and Pancala. You know, had they not realized how you know, how close to death they, you know, they were at this point, they might not be as shocked, but they both know it. They're both looking at it and they're saying, wow, you know, this is going to, you know, this is just nuts with this whole thing. So yeah, and it's a great shot because you also still see the smoke, there's still smoke coming out of the rocket itself, or the, you know, the mortar shell or whatever it is. Now what's really interesting is that in the book itself, it isn't Luz who's actually in there with him.
No, I
It's
can't remember who it was.
Bob
You're
Mann.
right.
Bob Mann.
Okay.
So on page 166 of the of the book. It says, here I'll backtrack a little bit to go back to what happened with Muck and Pincal. It says, suddenly a shell burst in the trees, then another, another. They kept coming. Corporal George Lez was caught out in the open. He began racing towards his foxhole. Sergeant Muck and Private Alex Pincal called out to him to jump in with them, but he decided to get to his own, and with shell bursts all around, splinters and branches and whole trees coming down, made it and dived in. Lipton was sharing a foxhole with Sergeant Bob Mann, the company HQ radio man. The Germans sent over some mail. A shell that was a dud hit just outside their foxhole. Lipton looked at it. Mann lighted a cigarette. Lipton had never smoked, but he asked for one, and that night had his first cigarette. Lez went to check on Muck and Pincala, the men who had offered to share their foxhole with him. The hole had taken a direct hit. Lez started digging frantically. He found some pieces of bodies and a part of a sleeping bag. So, again, it's interesting, first of all, the way that it's in the book, how, you know, it doesn't tell us the you know, that Muck and Pincala got hit before we see the whole thing with Lipton. You know, so I guess from a storytelling perspective, you know, what Graham did was is he decided, okay, I'm going to rearrange this a little bit to give us a little more suspense, because, you know, first you know that Muck and Pincala get blown up, and then Lez goes into another foxhole that, you know, that another rocket lands in, but obviously doesn't explode, and the two of them completely, you know, I think it's more impactful for us, pun intended, you know, to see it this way. And it just, wow. And then, you know, both Luz and Lip are just staring at the fact that this dud has hit them. Luz takes out a cigarette and starts and lights up. And then Lipton looks over to him and just basically takes the cigarette from him and starts smoking it. You know, and Donnie Wahlberg does a great job here, because you see that he's, yeah, you can see the character is in shock as he's doing this type of thing. And then Lez turns to him and goes, I thought you didn't smoke. He goes, I don't. And he goes, uh-huh. And then Lez lights up another one for himself. Now, one of the things that Graham told me was is that, you know, through his conversations with the real Carwood Lipton, he, after this particular incident in his life, he smoked for the next 40 years.
Oh, wow. I didn't, yes. That's amazing. Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. And as they're both sitting there smoking while they're staring at this dud, so it fades out. And then, you know, when the shot comes back on, we see, we see two men walking in the distance, and we hear the narration once again from Lipton. He goes, the shell that hit the foxhole Les and I were in was a dud. The one that hit Muck and Pincala's foxhole wasn't. That's just the way it was. Muck and Pincala were good men. And then he goes, their death hit Malarkey the hardest. So, you know, as they're showing all these guys, you know, walking through the woods, trying to, you know, see where they need to go. And, you know, we see a point where Lez picks up a cross, supposedly from, you know, the where Muck and Pincala got hit, and he hands it over to Malarkey. You know, how, you know, and it's great, the editing, the way that they do it, that as he's saying, you know, their death hit Malarkey the hardest is when Malarkey has been being given the cross. And you know, we continue with the narration, and then Lipton goes, Malarkey's best friends in the company have been Compton, Muck, and Pincala. In less than a week, he'd seen two of them die. And then we see that Lipton is one of the guys shows up in front of Lipton and goes, what's the word? The men on the line are okay. Food's been resupplied. We're in good shape. He goes, okay, we'll just hunker down. We might get some relief soon. Okay, all right. And then, you know, we see that Lipton is watching Malarkey. And then Lipton once again says, all right. And I've said this before. I love the way how it keeps jumping back and forth between the narration and real stuff going on with Lipton at the time. It gives us a very well-rounded view of Lipton, as things are going on, and theoretically, in retrospect, as he's explaining things. So I like the way they do that.
No, I agree. No, it's good. It works very well. 'Cause I can sometimes be too much for a TV, for a movie or a TV show where it's take, you don't know what to further to focus on the actual
That's right.
scene or the narration. But I think this works very well. Yeah, this works very well. I think that's down, that's down to the writing, the directing, the
100%.
actors. It just works very, very well.
And then we're back with Lipton narrating, and he goes, "Later that day, we were back in our old position, overlooking Foy. We were all worried about malarkey." And Scott Grimes does a great job here also showing, the despair that Malarkey is feeling, through everything that's going on here.
I think Scott Grimes is one of the standout actors in this show, in the whole show. He is probably my favorite actor in the show. I want to say character as well. The way he portrayed Malarkey, because you see him as a very young, immature soldier, paratrooper in the early episodes. He just enjoys. He's just this character, what we would call, funny character. I don't want to say the word immature, like not immature as in childish, but he's just young. He's just a young man. But this is 6 months later, well, from Normandy to Bastogne. This is probably six,
Even
7 months
more. Right now
later,
we're
and you see,
I think it was January 10th was the day that they were killed.
January, is it?
So yeah.
So, I think the transformation of Malarkey as a person is insane. It's incredible, and that's why I love his portrayal of him, because you do see, and certainly for you start to see that transformation of Malarkey, of maturing, because of the impact of war, of what he's gone through. And I think Scott Grimes pulls it off magnificently as well. And I think you really see the real, what's the word? I think it's episode 8. I think that's where you really see him, where he is just tired now and he wants to go home. I think it's episode 8, yeah, The Last Patrol. I think that transformation is, he is for me one of these standout actors in the show.
Yeah, completely. Yeah,
Yeah,
I'd love to be
and
able to
it's
speak to him.
definitely,
He hasn't responded to anything that I've sent him, so
he's a hard
yes.
man to get hold
Oh,
of.
he's busy.
Oh, trust
He's
me, it
busy. What can you
is.
expect?
Yeah. But he's a wonderful human. He is so funny. He is, yeah, he's a lovely man. Having met him in person, spoke to him on the phone, he is just everything I expected to be. It's, yeah, it's, and it's just, for me, he's, like I says, he's one of my
Okay,
favorites in this show
I
as well.
completely understand that. And now we actually get a nice heart-to-heart between Lipton and Malarkey, where Lipton shows up. Malarkey's looking once again at this cross, and Lipton comes up to him and goes, "Hey, Malark, hey, didn't I hear you say you wanted to bring a Luger home for your kid brother?" And Malarkey goes, "Yeah." And then he gives him Hubler's gun, which it's really weird that he would do that. Because this gun has, I guess, a bad omen on it. But again, it sort of makes sense to let's make lemonade from lemons type of thing. Let's do something good for this. And then he goes, "Well, why don't you give him that?" And then Malarkey goes, "It's Hoobs, right?" And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Yeah, I was gonna get rid of it, but I don't know." He goes, "Listen, Captain Winters was wondering if you wanted to go back to battalion and work as his runner for a few days." So again, it's another indication that even Winters is aware that Malarkey is taking it not easily, everything that's been going on. And then that they want to give him something light to do. And he goes, "Tell him thanks. I'm gonna stay here. Well, look, why don't you at least come back for an hour or so? Say goodbye to Buck. I'm sure it'll mean a lot to him." He goes, "All right." And Lip says, you be careful with that. He goes, yeah. So, you know, again, at least he gives him those words of caution. You know, don't play around with it. And, you know, hopefully you'll be safer than Hubler was, you know, which we talked about it, you know, a few weeks ago, how devastating this whole idea was, you know, that someone like Hubler, you know, loses his life by an accident, as opposed to, you know, in the heat of battle or whatever it is. You know, nobody will ever know what really happened in that situation, you know, whether the gun went off on its own, whether it got snagged on a branch, whether, you know, whether he was playing with it. Nobody knows. And nobody will ever know, obviously. You know, and it's sort of good that they leave it that because we'll never know, they sort of do leave it very ambiguous as to what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But still makes you feel for Hubler because of what happened.
Does, yeah.
Even if he did cause it, you still feel for him. You know, that's not you know, that's not a reason to look down on Hubler, I guess you could say. And then at this point, Lip finishes his conversation and starts walking off. And then we hear once again narration from Lip, where he says, getting even 50 yards back from the line just for an hour or two could make it a big difference in a soldier's state of mind. The morning after the shelling that killed Muck and Pinkala, I saw a soldier trying to dig a foxhole with his bare hands. And then we see a soldier just on the ground trying to, you know, scrape his way into the ground. And then, you know, the real Lip, we hear him, and he goes, "Private." And then back to the narration, it says, he didn't notice that he'd torn off all his fingernails. "Private, hey." And then we're back to the narration, and he goes, "I got him out of there quickly, not for his sakes, but for ours. Fear is poison in combat, something we all felt, but you just didn't show it. You can't. It's destructive, and it's contagious." So again, that's also, you know, it gives us so much insight into what goes through the minds of men, you know, while they're in combat, and the things you need to do in order to stay sane, even if you, you know, you might feel certain things, but you need to keep it to yourself, that type of thing, and not to mess with the morale, I guess you'd say, of everybody else.
And that actually happened as well. With the private that actually had, you know, Private Griffiths is his name. Obviously one of those, you know, played by an SA, I can't think of his name for the death of me. I think if I remember rightly, it was a chap we saw speaking to Lipton a couple of minutes ago when they're kneeling down, if you see that interaction. I think it's the same chap. I can't remember his name, his actual real name. But if I remember rightly again, he obviously is in the movie business and he plays doubles. He's like a body double, and I'm sure he was the body double of Beetlejuice. Can't think of his name for the death of me. But yeah, so that did happen. Yeah. And it just shows his leadership as well. I think it shows Lipton's leadership, and I think that's what they were seeing as well, which resulted in you know, in getting his commission.
You said Luke Griffin? Is that who it is?
No, that's somebody else. No, Griffiths, Private Griffiths. Is that's a real Easy Company member. Obviously, it's just one of the undermentioned members of the company. But the actor, so the person who was doing the scratching, who was portraying Griffiths, I'm sure it's him we see interacting with Lipton, you know, a minute or two earlier as well. When
interesting, in the book, I don't find a reference to him.
Obviously, mentioned in the script. I'm sure it's in the book as well, if I remember rightly. I think, did they name him in?
I don't seem to find him here, but
I'll have to ask John Weecher now if that's, because he will know as well, and he'll be able to verify.
Okay, that. Again, it doesn't really matter, you know, from that perspective. You know, the whole idea of, you know, just showing that, you know, this is the type of things that happened.
Yeah, battle fatigue, or you know, PTSD. It's very much there, wasn't it? Very much there.
Yeah, I don't Again, I don't see the reference in the book by doing a quick search, but it is possible that it is there somewhere, and
I think with the book as well, I think I'll have to look now. You got me thinking now. But I do remember seeing it, I'm sure I remember seeing it. But I think with a book, it might not necessarily follow in chronological order, if that makes sense. Like, more they sort of splice things that might have
Okay.
happened previously to bolt on to this, because it shows that sort of connection with Lipton or, whatever. So it might have happened like later on in the real
Right.
Easy
Okay.
Company story.
Possible. It's possible also that it's mentioned in a different one of the books. Maybe, maybe it's in Lipton's book. I don't know. Did Lipton write a book? Oh, okay.
I don't think he did. I've got the book next to me. I've got a book next to me for
Right.
Band
No.
Brothers. But anyway, yeah.
Okay.
It does, yeah.
And then the shot changes, and we see both Malarkey and Buck, talking in the distance. And Malarkey then gives Buck a cigarette. Malarkey goes, "Told you I'd get you started."
I've just watched the clip again. I was wrong about the actor. It's a different actor with a
Okay.
claw in. Sorry.
No,
I
that's
messed up
okay.
there. I thought it
That's
was the
okay.
same actor, but
That's
no, it's
perfectly
a different
okay.
actor.
And then we're back to narration of Lipton, who's watching the two of them, and he goes, "Buck was never the same after seeing Toy and Garnier get hit that day. I guess he just needed some time away from it all." And then he, we hear the sigh in Lipton's voice, as Buck gets into a Jeep in order to get ready to leave, and then he salutes Malarkey, which is an interesting thing here because usually it works the other way around. The lower ranked soldier is the one who's going to salute first, as opposed to the officer. So I like the way they did that because it's basically saying that Buck has a lot of respect for Malarkey, and starts he gets in the Jeep, and the Jeep gets ready to pull out, and then that's the way this 5-minute segment ends. So, Leighton, did you have anything else you want to add about this particular 5-minute segment?
No, I take it then now. Obviously, for the next segment, it's
Right. Okay.
the
We
Battle of
will get
Foy.
there. We will get there. We will get there on
No, I'm just saying that's the
right.
next one.
Okay,
Sorry, no, nothing,
we'll get
nothing.
there on
Go
Monday. We'll talk about that. Okay, so today's segment is
ahead.
Band Brand, where my guests will give their top five fictional movie bands. Now, I know you're more of a World War II historian than a movie fan, but I figured it would still be fun
Oh,
to
I love
hear.
movies. Oh, I
No,
absolutely adore movies.
I'm
I
sure you
adore
do,
movies.
but I'm very curious to hear what you would have on your top five movie bands. So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Oh, number five. I suppose Rex Manning from Empire Records.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, I think just on a bit of a troll. I think it's just cheesy, isn't it? It's just this
No, there's one thing.
Lothario. Not that scene was
There's no such thing
a
as
good scene,
cheesy. Everyone has their their favorites, and that's what we want to hear here.
Oh, yeah, I think it's just Lothario, just typical of probably the 90s pop star in a way. That he's sex on legs or something. I can't really put anything. I think it's just struggling as well.
Okay.
And I saw his name, and he's sort of quite an unlikable character. I suppose he is what the music industry is, you could say as well. I think a reflection of a real. I watched this documentary yesterday about the Scottish hip hop duo who told the world they were American, and I think it's sort of a weird reflection, you could say, of they have to, it has to be a certain image to sell records. Where, when they approached record companies, as they were originally Scottish doing hip hop, they just literally didn't even get to show their stuff or display their stuff. It was no. As soon as they said they were Scottish, and then they did this flip without even seeing him in the face. You know, we're American, we're from California, we're in London. Bang, yes, we'll listen to you. California, you know, and I think then that's what they portray you to be. And I suppose with Rex Manning, it's not about who you are as a person, it's what you look like. You could say, and I think he, I suppose, does it quite well portraying that negative stereotype of it's not about your talent, it's about what you are, you know, what, you know, who you are, you could say, if that makes
Right.
sense.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. All right. Okay, let's move on to your number four.
Is it the Wanderers
Yes.
from That Thing You Do? Steve Zahn, oh gosh, who are the other guys? But no, I just like it, you know, it just reminded me of the Beatles, Tom Hanks as well. You know, I'm a big Beatles fan, and I think it, you know, for me, it's a really nice film. And again, it feels very Beatlesy in the sort of portrayal. So it's just more of that love and affiliation of the real a real band, you know, the Beatles, that sort of just the similarities, you could
Okay.
say.
All right, you're number three.
I'd say Auto Barn, but from Big Lebowski. Such a great film. I think it's German techno. And yeah, it's just German techno. It's actually quite good. And very, again, stereotyping German techno or German musicians, German bands, you know, like I suppose Rammstein, very, I don't know how to describe it, just good music as well. I don't know, it's just cheesy German. I say cheesy German, apologies for anything there. No, just a good film, and it's just, you know, yeah, I like it. I can't put a reason on it now on that one. I think I just had to put it a fitter in somewhere.
Okay, makes sense. All right, you're number two.
You know, I da, 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 da. Yeah, I it was gonna either gonna be Wild Stallions or Crucial Taunt, but I think I'm gonna go with Crucial Taunt because Wild Stallions were from Bill and Ted are terrible, but it's just that, again, that memory, nostalgia. But for Crucial Taunt, I felt like they were actually really talented. Wayne's World. Tia Carrere is the lead singer, and they do a fantastic rendition of Ballroom Blitz. It's outstanding, probably better than the original. Is it better than the original one? But it's very good, and it just, again, just very well done. Even though it's like a comedy, it's a parody type parody. You know, it's a comedy. It's just, they're
Okay.
just excellent. Yeah, Crucial Taunt from Wayne's World. Yeah.
All right, and you're number one.
School of Rock. Again, just it's a great movie. Excellent references to a wonderful genre of bands, from Led Zeppelin to, you know, AC/DC to, you know, all of them, you know, oh God, there's a lot more than that. My mind has gone blank now. But how he creates this band, how Jack Black creates this band with all his kids, you know, sadly one of them's died a couple of years ago, the drummer. But it's just an excellent film. It's just an excellent film. And I mean, there's a battle of the bands in the middle of the day of a weekday as well, which is bizarre. But we won't let, you know,
Needs to be during school.
actual that would never happen type thing get in the way of a good movie
Okay.
story. But I would say School of Rock. You watch it every time you see them play. It's just outstanding. I just, looking at the movie, I'd say the holes in the movie, you could
Yeah, that's
say,
fine.
with
We
that.
overlook those type of holes.
It's just a good film. It's just a good film. We don't mind that. We don't mind that. Yeah, no, it's just a good film. And Jack Black plays Jack Black, you could say, because I don't think he's changed,
No,
you know, how
not
he
much.
portrays himself in interviews, or, you know, even I saw some footage of him at a Formula One race, I think it was a few days ago. He's just that quirky, dewy, you know. Do you know what? Dewey Cox, I should have put in there as well. Forgot about that one from Walk Hard. Forgot about that one. Maybe I should have slipped that in instead of Rex Manning, instead of having a negative character. Forgot about Dewey Cox. But no, School of Rock.
All right. Excellent.
Just because
Okay.
it's just a
Thank
nice
you
feel
very
good
much for
movie.
that list. So now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie. So I will spin the wheel and we're going to see what movie you get. Round and around and around the wheel goes. See what we get. Okay, you might know this one. Okay, this is a movie from 1981, starring Lee Marvin and Mark Hamill.
I knew you were going to say that.
So
I've
I
never
don't
seen
even
it.
need to go any further.
I've never even
You've
seen
never
it.
seen it?
Never seen it.
Do you know what it is, though?
It's the big red one, isn't it?
This is the big red one. This it is. That's right. It's a the sorry, it's from 1980, not 1981. And the IMDb synopsis is: a hardened sergeant and the four core members of his infantry unit try to survive World War II as they move from battle to battle throughout Europe. It also stars the recently deceased Robert Carradine, Bobby DeCiccio, Kelly Ward. It's an interesting movie. I wouldn't say it's great, but I think at the time it was much better received, before many more better World War II movies came out, I guess you could say. Yeah. All right. So, Leighton, do you want to tell people where they can find you?
In my house, generally.
In your house. Okay. Well, I mean, I don't know if you want to give people your address.
No, of course. That's me being silly. No, we have a few 506. Currently, I'm building up the courage to put myself in front of the camera to do some, history on your doorstep type stuff, local history. I'm hoping, planning slash hoping to do something on the weekend, where I'm from, in South Wales. And then the idea is to, ideally it's World War II, and there's a YouTube channel as well. So it's Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. We're Happy Few 506. But predominantly at the moment, I'm just pumping out then and nows of days gone by slash World War II sites. And even did a weird one with Lord of the Rings, where I went to the Doors of Durin. I hope I say that right. I'm not a Lord of the Rings fan, so apologies. Where I got a picture from a book of the actual Doors of Durin and went to the place in Stone the World where these
Did you say
doors were.
friend?
Say
Did you
again,
say
sorry.
friend and enter?
No, I didn't. I didn't say anything. No. But I went to the place where these doors were based on.
Yeah.
And I think it's just I like the idea of doing that. I think it just sort of, it might not be the actual site, but it could be the inspiration for something. Or, like it says with Tolkien, certainly for that one. And then I've got another one. I saw something on Instagram a few days ago where they're talking about King Arthur, and where I'm from again, my hometown. There's some woods and there's a cave there. And I remember my dad saying when I was younger, a few times that that's where King Arthur was buried. That's where King Arthur's buried. That's where King Arthur was buried. You just think it's something that your parents say. You think whatever. You just talk absolute crap. He just But it's weird because he wasn't, he wasn't, it's well, I say not well documented, but it's been written in quite a few things that even this. So this interaction I had on Instagram recently with this American woman was talking about King Arthur and its links to Wales, and there were people saying, no, he's not real, or he's English, or he's this, blah 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 blah, and this woman saying, no, he's Welsh, and she just sort of started talking about it and give a bit more detail. And I mentioned about these caves in a place called Coed Muster. And she said, oh yes, that's where he was. These are the books you need to buy, but that's where on his way to his, when they basically buried him in these caves for about, I think it's just about a year before they moved his body on to the next location. So I know where those caves are. I haven't been there since I was a child, but again, that's on the list, you know what I mean? So it's yeah. That's what you'll see on the channel. Certainly at the moment, it's a lot of then and now. And again, it's sort of building the courage up to do a more podcasting, and some YouTube videos as well. Put myself in front of the camera as well, which is probably my biggest fear. I'm just very nervous, very shy. I can be very quite
Yeah,
shy.
you look great. You look great, in front of the camera.
Thank you.
All
I do
right.
waffle a lot, yeah.
And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@moverob.net. So, Leighton, Leighton and I will be back on Monday with more descriptions of things that are going on in Foy. So everyone have a great weekend, and until then, curry!
Curry!